All right, welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. At the time of this this recording, Ali, we were really blown away, like literally pretty windy here in the Midwest over the last weekend.
Yeah, people know I'm a skydiver.
Yeah.
If you don't, you may not know this, that there are limits to the wind in which you can fly. And spring is notoriously, at least in the Midwest, you get the battle between like the northern and Gulf air, like pushing and fighting. And so it tends to be pretty windy. And it wasn't even safe enough to like go outside for like to kite. So sometimes paragliders in particular are like, will work on their kiting skills to work on handling a canopy in high winds. Wasn't even safe enough for that.
I feel like you jump out of an airplane and you over Minnesota and you end up in Toronto.
pretty much, you would end up very far away.
So, no, I mean, that's how. Yeah, you ever wonder how they found the limits? Like, what is the limit and who tested that? I don't know. That's kind of where I'm going with our last
guest. At some point, somebody went in the air.
Yeah, right. Somebody had to do it, right? And
they got pushed backwards a lot.
Yeah, right. So, no, that's, you know, I think that's, you know, that someone would have been Jeanette, right? Dr. Starpine, you know, right? Like, we had her on the last episode. Just a great conversation. I'm still like, we took a little bit of pause between the time that we interviewed her and this podcast. And wow, I don't even know where to start. Where do you want to start with that? A true disruptor.
If you have listened to the podcast for any amount of time, you know, we bring on such amazing guests that really span such a wide breadth and depth of disruption. But when I think about like the heart of this podcast and trying to find individuals and like exemplary people to bring to the listeners of what it means to be a disruptor at even an individual level, Jeanette is someone that comes top of mind, which is why we wanted to have Jeanette on the podcast. I've been lucky enough to work with Jeanette for almost 2 years. And so, I mean, working, and I work with 30 plus people, all doctorates, top of their fields, you know, at Bard when I go there. And Jeanette is above and beyond everyone I work with. I mean, just like, and I think of someone who is just doing such amazing things and has it and is so humble about it. Jeanette doesn't even see herself as like this, you know, crazy disruptor, and yet continuing to make change wherever they're working and doing stuff. And that includes Australia and San Diego and New York and all the places that Jeanette has been at and continues to do work. So
yeah,
if you haven't listened to that episode yet, to get a sense of Jeanette, go back and listen to it.
Right. I feel like she's kind of a, oh, I can't remember the show now, where the person just pops in different areas. It was a show back in the day. It'll come to me, but Quantum Leap, right? That was the joke, or the show. Like, she quantum leaped into all different areas of education. And I think one of the things that really struck me, for somebody who has that kind of experience and that kind of level of understanding of very different areas and all the different levels of education, the one thing that really struck me was creating space. She constantly, and we've talked about the sandbox, but I think when you get an amazing educator like Jeanette, like it's about understanding how to create space. And some people are good at it. I'm going to tell it that Jeanette's really good at creating space, not being afraid and just say, well, I'll try it and I'll go. And then understanding like when the limit hits the roof, and then, you know, then transitioning into another area of study, rather going to her doctorate or going, you know, to another level of education. It was very interesting because listening to Jeanette speak about every single level that she had. It was all about, well, there was a little bit of space there, and she ran with it, just jumped in and worked it, and then just knew when to move, like when to move. And I don't think a lot of educators know they have these different options, that they have a different level that they could go to. It was interesting. And one of my good friends, Real Rap with Reynolds, he just put out there, CJ Reynolds, that is, just put out there one where when to call it quits or to move forward. And he kind of like stacked blocks. Like once you hit like a ceiling, that's actually that the pain of that is the starting of a transition into something else. And Jeanette's entire story was those blocks being put on. And even at the end of the podcast, Jeanette was like, I'm going to go, I'm not sure what's next, but there's something else, readying themselves for the next block. So I thought that was cool, that she was talking about that. That was really cool.
I agree. I mean, one of the most striking parts of Jeanette's story that I think will resonate, if it hasn't already, with educators is she was in the system all the way to the top level, all the way to the doctorate, mm-hmm. and was trying the poster example. I actually had never heard that story of trying to create a scientific poster and do so in a very imaginative way, and getting a lot of pushback from that. No, people just wanted the sterile, you know, stereotypical. In science, it is literally a poster board, and it still is like the same as when they did it, I don't know, 50 years ago. I mean, maybe the graphics are better. It's printed instead of handwritten, but this idea of, you know, Jeanette was trying to make it interactive and have lights or buttons or, you know, I mean, just literally more of an art project combined with the science that she was presenting on, and it fell flat, and everyone looked at her like, she's like, maybe this isn't the medium. And what the big takeaway for me was that, like, Jeanette was in the system and realized, you know, I don't know if it was in the moment or reflecting back, but that sometimes you have to do things within the system according to the rules, mm-hmm. whatever those rules are, rules in quotation marks for those not watching on YouTube, in order to get the respect of those in the system first to then make changes. So mm-hmm. that's the part I felt like was so encouraging for those who are still in the educational system at any level, is like, you're burnt out or you're feeling a lack of creativity. And, or let me also preface this with, it could be people entering the system and they want to make all these right. changes, but they haven't yet kind of, you know, built the relationships or connections to kind of get the respect. And so I felt like that was a really insightful piece we haven't necessarily heard of, that you can make changes within a more traditional system. However, caveat being, you may need to play by the rules, so to speak, for a time. I'll say whatever the minimum time is, in order to kind of win hearts and
right.
And win minds and build a movement. And we've talked many times before about the importance of a grassroots movement mm-hmm. from the bottom up, and it really can be done. Jeanette is an exemplary model of that at different organizations, in working within, I think that PhD experience really set Jeanette up for, one, realizing I don't want to be in the system, not right. the traditional system forever. Two, that's when Jeanette transitioned into being a chemistry performer for high schools using PhD knowledge and starting like their own company. I don't know how much mm-hmm. Jeanette highlighted that in the episode, but that was because Jeanette didn't feel like she could use her creativity in the traditional field and was like, no, I'm going to reject that. Then ended up going back into higher education and teaching and working in that model. So has really pivoted a lot mm-hmm. And been in the system, out the system, disrupting it both ways.
Yeah, I agree as well. Just piggybacking off of that, I do like really love that concept. It was something that was tough for me to learn. When you want to go in somewhere and you want to change, like you want to, even if you're a new teacher, it's a different generation. There are some traditional younger teachers coming in, but there's also, I feel like, a lot of innovative, energy there. And I think one of the things that people need to realize is depending on the school culture, and this kind of goes back to when we're looking at hiring and what teachers can do and what schools can do, is there is, you said it yourself, we don't know exactly how long it takes for you to jump through the hoops to be able to, okay, get your feet in and have people start to trust you, et cetera. I do know in my experience, it's different with different schools. There are very traditional schools, and then there are some schools where, okay, it could take 4 years at one school, it could take 1 year, it could take a semester, depending on that. And in my experience, it usually takes about 1 to 2 years in programs that are elective, because of elective programs, kids elect to take them. So if kids are starting to migrate into an elective area and you just showed up, or you and the team just showed up, that's likely that you're going to start to gain trust, right? I mean, and then I don't know. I don't know what that looks like in a, like if you're in the core, graduate requirement areas, I don't even know what that means. Do you get invited to a bunch of different workshops and you're a speaker? Do your kid, I mean, obviously, if you have these data that shows like test scores and all that's going up. But yeah, I don't know. Have you ever run into that? Like, what do you feel like at the schools that you were at? How long did it take them to trust you to do some interesting things, or did they ever?
So I would say I was at relatively larger school districts, and to so in meaning one high school I was at was over 2,000 students, and then another district I was at had four high schools, and each one was about 1,500 students per high school, right? So very large school districts. And I think the way core moves in larger school districts is typically in cycles, because you're going to have a director or some kind of coordinator over the core math and science, social studies, language arts. And so you can't necessarily make big changes unless you're in a curriculum revamp cycle, which that might be every 2 years, every 3 years, every 4 years. I don't know. And I would say major changes to the curriculum are challenging. However, you can be innovative and do kind of, I would say, different routes of teaching it, practices. Like you could flip the teaching model. You could do a more inquiry based in the science realm. You could totally do different kind of labs. Like there are ways to innovate and still get at the objectives, and like lots of creativity within that. But it's the curriculum itself in science, math, I think English and social studies, at least in the state of Missouri, are more locked in than electives. Let's just say that. But there are cycles. I mean, I remember when I was starting teaching, they were getting rid of the Common Core in Missouri and going with like the national, oh my gosh, and it's NG, Next Generation Science Standards. And now I don't even think those are what are used entirely. All of that to say is
They just
that
revamp it.
they basically just, decide they're gonna change it. Doesn't mean it actually changes that much. It's In those scenarios, I think the power comes from the smaller the school district. Basically, everything I just said can be boiled down to the bigger the school district, I think the less the more time it will take and the less room you're going to have nowadays to wildly disrupt. That doesn't mean it can't happen.
Right.
It's just going to take longer and it's going to probably be more of an uphill battle because the system is so much bigger.
Right.
Bigger this, right? It's like, I would think it would be like the equivalent to making changes at the state or the federal level. Like, relatively, there's a large gap between small rural school district and a big metropolitan multi high school school district. Like, you're going to have just, it's going to take that much longer.
I think, yeah, that's interesting. I'm wondering though, if in a small district, you have more eyes on you and they're more like, I can hide in a big district. I feel I can, right? So, for instance, one of the previous districts that I worked at, was four high schools, very big. And I remember the, history or social studies department chair at that school. Some of them have to teach some courses and some of them don't at all. And I remember, like, you know, he was an amazing teacher because what he told me, he was like, look, here's what I do for an entire year, right, of a course or a semester, depending on. He's basically like 2 months out of an entire year, like, we go hard on the test, right? And then the rest of the time, so he's like, he gets everybody to a test up front and then, you know, works them that way. So the data comes through and the rest of the time is his sandbox. And he loved it. But the funny thing was, I hope nobody knows who I'm talking about, but he like basically had the AP, the assistant principal of curriculum, like that person thought that they were doing, you know, whatever it was that they should have been doing, lined up, kind of like what you're saying, very linear, very, you know, rigid. And his test scores were out of the sight, like, because he was like, look, guys, let's get to this point, and then after this, we're going to go crazy with some fun projects, da, 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 da. And it was just a sandbox. And I don't think she knew that. She just looked at the data, right? And I thought, all right, that's cool, you know? And I really respected him for that because the kids really did learn. Like, they learned so much deeper knowledge than, you know, going chapter by chapter, doing the common, everybody's doing the same thing. And he had just some amazing stuff. And that, you know, where that ended up is kind of where Jeanette was talking. And I think you even said it in your final thoughts about, like, blasting away some of these silos, you know, pulling art and science together. A lot of this person's projects for the kids' projects were very cross-curricularized. And not intentionally, they just did it that way. You know, you had a kid who liked music and they would bring that into history, or, you know, a kid who would like even math and bring that into in history and such. And I just like that, you know, pulling down these silos. I think it's a very, very difficult thing to do in a very rigid system, to consistently do it and to scale it. But I felt like, you know, Jeanette knew, like, as soon as she like hit that, like, and was running with it, rubbed some people the wrong way, because there's always going to be naysayers out there. She also knew that. So I really liked, you know, how, you know, the no silos, let's break those down and give kids the opportunity to look at that. I get to do that in business all the time because it all the subjects run into business, right? So it's not that hard to do, but I can imagine in science and such, it's you got to have a very creative person like Jeanette to do that.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up the kind of this idea of siloing and how isolating it can be as an educator. And the work Jeanette is doing now with the Climate Science Alliance, I thought was it's such a cool way to bring so much of this educational background into a nonprofit that really is trying to partner with school districts and the community. And we've certainly had lots of people on the podcast who are either in business or they are part of an organization of some kind that is partnering with school districts or is a program within a school district, et cetera. We say all the time on, you know, like community partnerships need to be more ingrained.
Right.
And that's really going to help bring to life the curriculum and reduce isolation for educators. And I love that someone in the system who's gone to the highest level in the system saw that need, worked in higher education, built a program that partnered the undergraduates with the local high schoolers to do like mentorship and learn about research and all of this really cool stuff, that she blew up that program and then realized that still wasn't enough. And so, right, like I want to use this unique skill set, this background in science and education, and then really try and reach more people. And that, like, I think a disruptor looks at opportunities and like, how can I make this bigger and better? And Jeanette is doing that work. And even though Jeanette is relatively new in her current role, is already growing that work and has tons of plans to kind of, I know personally Jeanette's vision to partner with as many, you know, science educators, and it doesn't even have to be science, but it's the most direct accessible route, but you know, elementary, middle school, high school, any kind of science curriculum, and get those teachers in a space where they are kind of like taken care of. They get to have this immersive experience, that they get to do stuff. They get to be part of a actual science and actual community action. And as well as students then can also be part of it. I think that's really integrative, to put the educator at the center and think about like how isolating it can be as an educator, because they were in that position, and then realize, what can I do to kind of celebrate and help teachers in a totally different role, like coming at it from a totally different direction. And I just love that, because we're all about how do we help teachers and not burden them with more. And there are organizations out there, and you know, if you are an organization doing work there, this is the time of year where I think teachers are very open to the possibility of partnerships for the upcoming school year. I think part of it is timing is everything, and the right partnership, when you know when it's right, it shouldn't. I know Jeanette talked about this. I just don't know if it was during the podcast or after the podcast. I know.
We had this great conversation afterwards. You should have just kept recording.
Kept recording. But it was this whole thing. It was about this fluidity of a partnership, in that it should feel right and it should flow and there shouldn't be a lot of barriers. And we've had plenty of guests on the podcast that have talked about how, like, when you have the right people in the room, the yes comes. And that type of kind of frame on community building and education and stuff really felt like, I don't know, I just, it felt so good to hear somebody say that and be like, look, I'm looking out for teachers. I think some of it is, how do we let teachers know more of these types of programs? So if you are, or you know, a program that, you know, is doing great community work, they want to partner with schools, or they want to partner with more people. Educators are great people to partner with, because they can tie it into so much stuff in their curriculum. You know, you've got the gamut, whatever your specialty is. I'm sure there's an educator out there. But when you find the right partnership, it's just going to flow, and it's going to work. And so if you are or know of an organization that is trying to connect with schools, let us know so that we can mention them on the podcast. We can connect in our networks with somebody that might want that resource. And we love being connectors here and reducing the isolation in education.
I think you even said it again in the podcast. I remember, like, she turns the light on for people. But going back to what you said about having the educator at the center, she really understands the educator. I think there's a lot of these, you know, that you have to really understand the educator. You have to understand what we go through, the zero breaks, the, you know, how can somebody from the outside see, you know, how can we help educators on the inside, right? The other person that I constantly go back to and see who understands that is also CJ Reynolds, right? So, but you know, with Jeanette, like understanding, you know, that silo of not only the curriculum, but feeling like you're on your own in education, there is little or no time to play. You got to keep your meetings. You got to keep your freaking meetings outside, folks, with educators, because we can't push something 15 minutes because we're in class. Like, it is such a packed day. It's one of my biggest pet peeves when someone's like, oh yeah, I can't show up today. What about tomorrow at, like, you know, 2 o'clock? And you're like, dude, I'm like teaching seventh period, man. Like, I can't do that, right? And when we schedule things, I get really angry about that. But I think, you know, Jeanette understands that, and educators who have been inside and really understand that. The key really isn't about just let's get right to student outcome. The key really is the humans in the room, starting with the leader, right? And that's the educator. And that's really, you know, how I really felt Jeanette just brought it, understanding how to turn that light on. And there was a lot of, okay, yeah, okay, I get that. And maybe we can do it this way, or let's try this way. There wasn't just like, oh, darn, all right, well, I guess I can't meet with you. I've worked with plenty of partners that it just didn't work out. And that's fine. I mean, it is what it is. But I think the more, like you said, the more partnerships in the community that can really understand what a school day looks like, understand what scheduling looks like, and then work within that, because it is super, super rigid. It's like you can't jump on an airplane. You know, you can jump out of one, but you can't. Well, I mean, you could. I mean, all right, stunt people like you, you probably jump into an airplane underneath. But I'm saying, like, if you're on an airliner, that thing's gone. You can't get on that plane. You got to wait till the next plane. That's kind of like education, right? You have to. There's all these nooks and crannies that people have to do. But I like the fluidity of what Jeanette is doing and really understanding that. And then the one thing that, you know, I'm going to kind of finish off is the vision, right? A vision and then actually going in and constructing that vision are two very different things. And long time, Allie, I used to think it was one and the same. It was like, this has to work this way. It's got to go. Why not? Right. And now, you know, I think you understand as you mature, you're like, okay, well, here's the vision. Here's what I have to work with over here, what I can control, what I can't control. And I think that's super important. And then to have somebody as a partner understand what you can and can't control is amazing, which is exactly where Jeanette is at right now. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, as we kind of wrap up this podcast episode, you're mentioning CJ Reynolds, right? Real Rap with Reynolds.
Yep.
I think that's what it was.
Yep.
The other person. So I try to think outside the box of guests that get education, but just to give one, a great throwback episode would be Robert Pepo's episode.
Right.
He opened up 2023 for us, and we need to get him back on. I'm just going to say that, because when I think about someone who is working in the community, and he owns Pepo Subs,
yep.
Okay? He sells sandwiches, you know, quote unquote, like, you know, is it like, but from when we talked into where he is now, like, has just his vision and getting it done is out of this world. One shout out. If you do not know who Robert Pepo is, you will soon.
Right.
And it's also just, he gives back, and he is a huge part of communities and schools, and all he walks the walk, he talks the talk, and he does it from a business perspective. And you can do it from whatever perspective you have gifts and talents on. So it's like, we don't want to limit, like, yes, Jeanette is in the science realm and is doing stuff in that area, but like, I'm certain that, you know, engineering, I'm certain that artists, I'm certain that, you know, writers, like, I mean, I don't know, like, healthcare, pick an industry. We've had people from all types of bubbles on this podcast, and we'll have more. like the we always say this, and we, I probably don't say it on the podcast, but it's like we'll never run out of people to talk to because there's so many different bubbles. I think it's just elevating those voices and having people realize like we don't have to do things the way we've always done them. But to bring this all together is like you may have to work within the system for some time to realize like where your next step is and how to get that bigger vision done, and also get the respect of people in the system to take you seriously. Or you just put in the time like Robert Pepo has done. And he's just like, I'm not taking no for an answer. That's another approach. If you haven't heard that episode or know who he is, I mean, like, I just, we have to get him back on. So I think it would.
That's not a problem. There's been a lot of growth, and to see that, I think we're all about journeys here and really understanding, you know, how people build on it and take risks. Cause I think that's really education. Education really, it's painful. It hurts, yet it's a little bit scary, but man, the payoff is so much better than just, you know, checking the box. And that's what we're all about here in Disrupting Education. Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway too from Jeanette was, you know, sometimes you just got to play the game a little bit and then make your move, right? You find that and then you go, you get it, some trust and such. So if you haven't heard that episode, please go back one, listen to it, take notes. Trust me. I mean, if anybody's like a newer educator thinking about education, this is the place as well for you. For anyone else, I mean, if you're liking these conversations, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It really does help us out. You know, you can always go back and take a look at all of the different people that we are talking to. And there's obviously a lot more coming up. We'll be talking a little bit about accountability. We'll be talking a little bit about is teaching worth it. We're going to be talking to architects. You know, we've already, you know, went through that. Obviously some amazing people at the CAPS network. There's so much. So, and in summertime, which we are in spring now, we always talk to a few students, who had just graduated to kind of get their view of it. So some great stuff coming up, Allie. So, for Allie Privet, I'm Peter Host. I just want to thank you all for hanging out with us again. Check us out. All our stuff will be right after this, and you can connect with us and see what's going on. Disrupting Education. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co. Or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college, campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.